back out into battle each night and return to her at dawn. For 100 more nights, Atala went beyond the gates to defend the city. He was untouchable in battle. No ghoul's claw could so much as scratch him. She stood vigil every night until on the 101st night of her watch, a stray arrow from the battle reached the walls and struck Princess Hawa down. When Atala saw her fall from the walls, his heart stopped from grief. The defenses that had guarded him so well for 100 nights fell away, and the ghouls overwhelmed him, tearing his heart from his chest. But in the moment that they both died, the sun bloomed in the dead of night one last time. The ghouls could not fight in the sun. Instead, they burned, and the city was saved with Hawa's and Atala's last breath. The people of the city named it in her honor, Saramotai. It meant the princess's death in the first language. I wondered if it was a genie's idea of a joke to give his daughter, born in Hawa's city, the same gift that she had. But Hawa was human. Or at least that's what the story said. I'd never wondered about it before. Folks in old stories sometimes just had powers that came from nowhere. But maybe Hawa was one of us. And centuries of retellings had buried the fact that Hawa was a demigod and not a true princess. After all, retellings of the Sultim trials made gentle, pretty Delilah out to be a hideous beast with horns growing out of her head. And some stories of the blue-eyed bandit left out the small matter that I was a girl. After Fahali, we thought it would be safe for her. Samira pulled Rana closer to her. Turns out, even if they don't want to destroy her, some folk want her for other things. It was stupid superstition that a piece of a demigod could cure all ills. Hala, our golden-skinned demigod, Emine's sister, carried a reminder of that every day. Two of her fingers had been cut off and sold, probably to cure some rich man's troubled stomach. The rumor is, even the Sultan is after a demigod. We know about that. I cut her off, sharper than I meant to. I'd been more worried about the Sultan tracking Noorsham down than anything else after we'd heard that rumor. I'd figured the chances there was another demigod out there who could match my brother's pure, destructive power seemed mighty slim. Even I couldn't raise a city the way Noorsham had. Still, we'd been careful the last few months not to let word spread that the blue-eyed bandit and the demigod who summoned desert storms were one and the same. Not that it mattered. I wasn't ever going to let the Sultan take me alive. But now I considered the tiny sun in Rana's hands. It was harmless enough, cupped in her palms like that. It might not be so harmless multiplied 100-fold. The Sultan's chances were looking better now. Your rebellion has kept him out of this side of the desert so far, Samira said. How long do you think you can keep him out? As long as it took. I'd be damned before I'd let the Sultan do to any other demigod what he'd done to Noorsham. Rana might be a cloistered brat who'd developed a big head from being told her whole life she was the reincarnation of a legendary princess, but she was a demigod, and we took care of our own. I can get her to safety. I couldn't leave her here. Not when there was a chance they might find her, and I might find myself staring over the barrel of a gun at her next. Out of the city. I don't want to go anywhere with you, Rana argued. We both ignored her. Prince Ahmed wants to make this country safe for demigod, but until then, I know where she can be protected. Samira hesitated a moment. Can I come with her? My shoulders eased in relief. That depends. Can you walk? Emin helped Samira, keeping her standing upright as she limped towards the stairs, Rana still clinging to her. I was about to turn away when Rana's light grazed the far wall. The cell wasn't quite empty. A woman in a pale yellow khalat was still curled in the corner, not moving. For a second, I thought she was dead, weakened by days in the dark, cramped prison. Then her back rose and fell, just slightly. She was still breathing. I crouched down and laid a hand on the bare skin of her arm. It was hotter than it ought to be down here away from the sun. She was sick with fever. My touch started her awake, and wide, wild eyes flew open. She gaped at me through a dirty curtain of hair in panic. Blood and muck caked it against her cheek, and her lips were cracked with thirst. Can you stand? I asked. She didn't answer, just stared at me with huge dark eyes. She looked worse than anyone else I'd seen stumble out of these cells. She could barely stay awake, let alone make a run for it. Emin, I called. I need some help here. Can you? Zahia? The name was whispered almost as a prayer, rasping out of a throat that sounded bone dry a second before her head lolled backwards and she lapsed back into feverish sleep. I stilled, every part of me. I wondered if this was what Hawa felt when her heart stopped in her chest. Suddenly, I wasn't the blue-eyed bandit. I wasn't a rebel giving orders. I wasn't even a Demji. I was a girl from Dustwalk again, because that was the last place I had heard anyone say my mother's name. Chapter 5.
What is it?
Emin appeared at my elbow.
I stumbled over my words, trying to pull my mind out of the past. There were other women in the desert named Zahia. It was a common enough name. But she looked at me like she knew me and said my mother's name. And that wasn't all that common. No, I wasn't a restless, reckless girl at the end of the desert anymore. I was the blue-eyed bandit, and this was a rescue.
I nodded towards the unconscious figure on the ground. Can you carry her? My voice was steadier than I felt. Emin, still wearing the shape he'd fought in, lifted the unconscious woman off the ground as easy as a rag doll.
This is ridiculous, Amani, Mahdi hissed, pushing through the crowd of freed women as I followed Emin out of the cell.
They didn't look so good, but they were alive and standing on 2 feet.
Freeing people is one thing, but you want us to escape while carrying someone out? We are not leaving her behind.
I'd made the mistake of leaving someone in need behind to save myself before. My friend, Tamid, the night I'd fled Dustwalk with Jin. I'd been scared and desperate and frantic. I'd taken Jin's hand without thinking, and I'd left Tamid to bleed out in the sand. I'd left him to die. I couldn't undo what had happened that night, but I wasn't the girl from Dustwalk anymore. I could make sure nobody got left behind again.
Who knows how to use a gun?
I asked the group of women. No one moved.
Oh, come on, it's not that hard. You point and shoot.
Samira's hand went up first. A few more followed her lead nervously.
Take them off the bodies,
I ordered, swiping one for myself. I flicked the chamber of the gun open.
The slightest touch of iron instantly made my power slip away. But there was a full round. I flicked it shut again and tucked it against my hip, careful not to let any part of it touch my skin. I didn't strictly need a gun. I had the entire desert. But it was always nice to have options. Let's move. It was after dark, and the streets of Saramotai were empty. A whole lot emptier than they ought to be this soon after nightfall. Curfew, Madi explained in a low whisper as we moved. The peasant usurper's way of keeping the population under control. He didn't need to say peasant with quite that much disdain, but I wasn't about to come to the defense of Malik after he'd taken Saramotai by force and corrupted Ahmed's name. Curfew was going to make things a whole lot easier, or a whole lot harder. Right in front of the prison, the road split. I hesitated. I couldn't remember where I'd come from. Which way to the gates? I asked in a low voice. The women following us stared at me with huge, terrified eyes. Finally, Samira loosed her arm from Rana's grip and pointed silently to the right. She almost managed to hide the fact that she was shaking. I kept my finger on the trigger as we pressed forward. I hated to admit that Madi was right, but we weren't exactly inconspicuous, sneaking out of the prison, trailing dozens of wealthy-looking women in torn culottes. And I wasn't counting on the women I'd given guns to. They held them like baskets to market instead of weapons. I had my suspicions that Madi could talk someone to death, but otherwise he was useless. And carrying the unconscious woman who'd called me by my mother's name made it more than a little difficult for Emin to fight if we ran into trouble. I supposed I'd just have to keep us out of trouble then. That wasn't exactly my strong suit. Still, we didn't meet with any resistance as we passed quietly through the deserted streets of Saramotai, retracing my steps from earlier in the day. I was just starting to think we were going to make it when we rounded the last corner and 2 dozen men with rifles looked up at us. Damn. They were clustered around the city gates in gleaming white and gold uniforms. Mirajin uniforms. And not the makeshift ones of the guards who'd blundered into the prison and to their deaths. Real ones. Which meant they were the Sultan's men. On our side of the desert for the first time since Fahali. I let out the most colorful Sichuan curse Jin had taught me as my gun leapt into my hand on instinct. I knew it was too late, though. We were caught. One of the women behind me panicked, and before I could stop her, she was gone, darting towards the maze of city streets like a frightened rabbit looking for cover. I'd watched birds of prey hunt. The rabbit never made it. A shot went off, another chorus of screams behind me, and a cry of pain cut off by a second bullet. The woman was sprawled on the street, blood mixing with dirt. The bullet had torn straight through her heart. No one else moved. I kept my finger steady on the trigger. 2 dozen guns were up and pointing at us. I just had the one. No matter what anybody had heard about the blue-eyed bandit, it wasn't actually possible to take out 2 dozen men with one bullet. Or even with my Demji gift. Not without someone else getting shot. So this is the legendary blue-eyed bandit. The man who spoke wasn't wearing a uniform. Instead, he was dressed in a gaudy blue kurta that he'd paired with a badly matched purple shima. He was the only one who didn't have a rifle pointed at my head. So, Malik, the usurper of Saramotai, had returned. I was dimly aware of Ikar perched at his watch post above the gate, legs dangling as he craned over the scene.
I'd just been informed you were gracing our city with your illustrious presence.
He used awfully big words that didn't seem all that comfortable in his mouth. His hollow face was skeletal in the buttery glow of the lamp. I'd grown up in a desperate place. I knew the look of someone who'd been ravaged by life. Only instead of lying down and taking his fate, he'd decided to take someone else's fate from them instead. I could guess that the kurta on his back was the Emir's. He had the shape of someone who'd worked and scraped and wanted and suffered, dressed in the clothes of someone who'd never known true want. My finger twitched on the trigger. I was itching to shoot something, but that wouldn't get us out alive. The small contingent of Sultan's men shifted nervously, looking at me, like they were trying to decide whether I really was the blue-eyed bandit. It looked like stories about me had made it all the way to Isman. "And you're Malik," I said. "You know, I'd heard when you hanged that lot of people you did it in the name of my prince. But it looks to me like your loyalty lies elsewhere." I gave the soldiers a mock salute with my free hand. "Not so much a revolutionary as an opportunist by the look of things."
"Oh, I believe wholeheartedly in the cause of your rebel prince."
When Malik smiled in the light of the lamps held by the nearby soldiers, he looked like he was baring his teeth.
"Your prince calls for freedom and equality in our desert. I've spent my whole life bowing to men who thought they were greater than me. Equality means I should never have to bow again. Not to the Sultan, not to the prince, and not..."
He turned and spat towards Samira, making her flinch under his sudden attention.
"To your father, either."
The movement dashed light and shadow across the walls of Saramotai. Two huge figures hewn into the stone flanked the gates on this side. Hawa and Atulla, joining hands across the curve of the arch. I hadn't seen them on my way in, not with my back to them. I wondered what they would think if they knew that the city they'd fought so long to save from the outside had rotted from the inside. Paint had long since faded off the stone, though I thought I could make out the red of Atulla's shima. And I'd swear Hawa's eyes were still flaked with blue.
"I'm making my own equality," Malik said, pulling my attention back to him. "What does it matter if I'm raising up the low or bringing the folk up on high to their knees, so long as everyone winds up with their feet in the same dust? And she,"
he pointed at Rana,
"is going to buy our freedom."
"Your feet aren't in the dust." Samira pushed Rana behind herself protectively. She was doing a mighty fine job of hiding her fear. There was nothing but hate in her as she stood between the man who'd already killed most of her family and the one tiny piece of it left. "You're standing on the backs of the dead.
The rebel prince will lose this war."
One of the Sultan's soldiers stepped forward.
"Malik is a wise man to see it."
The words sounded forced and false, like it pained him to pander to Malik.
"The Sultan has agreed to give Saramotai to Lord Malik when he reclaims this half of the desert, in exchange for the Demji girl."
The Sultan might want another Demji to replace Norsham, but I wouldn't take a single loozy that he was willing to give up part of the desert for her. Malik was just stupid enough to think that the Sultan would keep his promise. You're outnumbered. That had never mattered much to me before. Drop the gun, bandit. Malik sneered. There's only one man who gets to call me that, I said. And you're not near as good looking as him. Malik's temper snapped faster than I expected. The gun that had stayed so arrogantly by his side was out and in his hand in the space of a breath, pressing to my forehead in the next. Behind me, I felt Emin shift forward, like he might try to do something. I held up a hand, palm flat, hoping he would take the hint and not get us both killed. From the corner of my eye, I saw him go still. The women from the prison were watching the scene unfold with huge, terrified eyes. One of them had started crying silently. It would have been nice if the bite of an iron barrel next to my skin was unfamiliar, but this was far from the first time I'd been threatened like this. You've got a smart mouth on you. Anyone ever tell you that? That wasn't a first either. But telling him that didn't seem all that smart. Malik! The soldier who'd spoken stepped forward, looking like his patience was wearing thin. The Sultan will want her alive. The Sultan is not my master. Malik's face had turned savage. He pushed the gun harder against my skull. I could feel the barrel of the pistol pressing between my eyes. My heart quickened instinctively, but I fought down that fear. I wasn't going to die today. You just cost me 20 fuzza, I sighed. I made a bet I could make it out of this city without anybody threatening to kill me, and thanks to you, I've just lost. Malik wasn't smart enough to be worried that someone with a pistol between her eyes was talking back instead of crying and cowering. Well, he pulled back the hammer on the pistol. Lucky for you, you're not going to be alive long enough to pay up. Malik! The soldier stepped forward again, his irritation falling away now. Seemed they had only just figured out they were dealing with an unstable man. By some unseen signal from their captain, the weapons were shifting, away from the women behind me, towards Malik. Any last words, bandit? Maybe you'd like to beg for your life? Or, a voice seemed to float out of midair by Malik's ear. Maybe you would. Malik tensed visibly in that way men did when they were in danger. It was a stance I'd become intimately familiar with in the past half a year. A thin bead of blood ran down his throat, even though it seemed like there was nothing around him but air. The tension in my shoulders finally eased. The trouble with having invisible backup was that you never knew exactly where she was. The air shimmered as the illusion cast by Delilah dropped, leaving Shahzad standing where there had been nothing a moment before. Her dark hair was tightly braided to her head like a crown. A white shima hung loose around her neck, and her simple desert clothes looked expensive. She was everything that Malik hated, and she had him helpless. She looked dangerous, and not just because one of her blades was pressed to Malik's throat, but because she looked like her deepest wish was to get to use it. Finally, and far too late, fear dawned slowly across his face. If I were you, I said, now'd be the time I'd drop that gun and start reaching for the sky. Chapter 6. I was so close to Malik, I could see his face vacillating between despair and desperate action. He chose the second one. But I was faster than his stupid brain could work. I dropped to my knees a second before the gun went off, the bullet burying itself harmlessly in the wall behind me. Malik hit the ground next to me a second later, a new red necklace from Shahzad's sword gracing his throat. But we weren't done yet. "That took you long enough," I said to Shahzad, rising to my feet as I whipped my hands up. On the other side of the walls of Saramatai, the desert surged in answer. After using nothing but a handful of sand down in the prison, the power of having the whole desert at my fingertips was almost intoxicating. "I see you managed not to get yourself shot this time." Shahzad whirled to face the remaining soldiers as I did the same. "You still owe me those 20 fuza, though." "Double or nothing?" I offered over my shoulder as we met back to back. The captain was already giving orders to the confused soldiers, recovering awfully quick, considering a new enemy had just appeared out of thin air. "Delilah," Shahzad called an order of her own. "Drop our cover." The illusion lifted like a curtain before a show. Suddenly, half the Sultan's men who'd been standing a moment earlier were crumpled on the ground, and our rebels were in their place, weapons drawn. Behind them was Delilah, face still round with innocence, her purple hair that came from not being wholly human, falling into wide, frightened-looking eyes. She dropped her hands, shaking with effort and nerves. She was scared, but that wasn't stopping her. "Navid." From behind me, Emin spotted him instantly among the crowd of rebels. A tall, desert-built man, Navid was one of our recruits from Fahali. We hadn't been trying to recruit people there, but after the battle it was hard to stop them joining up. Navid was one of the best. He was tough as anybody would need to be to survive this war we were fighting. And as earnest as you needed to be to think we stood a chance. He was hard not to like. But it still surprised me that Emin loved him. Navid's eyes went wide with relief as he spotted Emin, recognizing his beloved no matter the shape. It was a moment of distraction, his defense lowering in his relief that Emin was alive. I saw it, and so did the soldier on his right. The desert poured over the edge of the walls of Saramatai, cascading around the carving of Princess Hawa, knocking soldiers off their feet. I wrenched my arm up, flinging a burst of sand towards the soldier who would have killed Navid, knocking him down, and startling Navid's attention back away from Emin. "Watch your back, Navid!" I was already turning away. The sand turned into a hurricane around me. I swung one arm down, crashing sand across a soldier's face as he lunged for Delilah, pushing him away from her. A shout came from behind me. I spun in time to see a soldier lunging for me, sword up. I started to gather the sand into a blade in my hand, but I was too slow, and I didn't need to. Steel screamed against steel. Shahzad's blade landed a breath away from my throat, kissing the soldier's weapon. The blood that would have been all over his sword pulsed noisily through my ears. In one move that was too quick for me to see, he was on the ground. "You ought to take your own advice," Shahzad tossed me a spare gun. "Why would I need to watch my back when you've got it?" I caught the pistol a moment too late to shoot. Instead, I slammed the handle straight into the face of the nearest soldier, the blow cracking up my arm, blood from his nose spurting across my hand. The fight would be short and bloody. There were already more soldiers on the ground than standing. I fired. And now there was one more. I turned, already looking for my next target. I didn't see exactly what happened next, only splintered moments. Another gun at the edge of my vision as I raised my own weapon. Exhaustion making me sluggish, making my mind slow to understand what I was seeing. That the gun wasn't pointed at me. It was pointed at Samira. And the soldier already had a finger on the trigger. Everything happened then in the same second. Rana moved, swinging herself in front of Samira. His gun went off. So did mine. His bullet tore through green kalat and skin mercilessly. One split second and it was over. The fighting was done as quick as it had started. In the silence, all I heard was Samira screaming Rana's name as the little Demji's heart pumped out her blood onto the street, the tiny son in her hand dying with her. Chapter 7. Ahmed was waiting for us at the entrance to camp. That wasn't a good sign. Our rebel prince might not have the pretenses of most royalty, but he didn't usually wait for us like a wife whose husband had stayed at the bar one drink too long, either.
Delilah.
He took a step out towards his sister, leaving the cover of the archway. Shahzad checked the canyon walls for danger on instinct. The location of the camp was still safe as far as we knew, but if our enemies ever found out where we were, the top of the canyon surrounding us gave any attackers a clean shot with a rifle. At least one person had to care for Ahmed's safety, even if he wasn't going to do it himself. He didn't even seem to notice Shahzad's concern. All his attention was on his sister.
Are you all right?
A part of me wanted to tell Ahmed that he ought to have enough faith in us to bring his sister back in one piece. But then again, my shirt was now more red than white, which didn't exactly scream, "Everything's fine." Probably better to not draw attention to myself just now. It was my blood, my attacker's blood, Rana's blood. We tried to save her, but everyone could tell it was too late. She died quickly in Samira's arms. People die. I tried to remember that. It was what happened on missions. She wasn't the first, and unless we managed to kill the Sultan tomorrow and put Ahmed on the throne, she wasn't going to be the last. This is the cost of starting a war, said a nasty voice in my head that sounded too much like Malik. Only she was a Demji. We'd never lost a Demji in the fighting before. Or a child. This was the Sultan's fault, not ours. He'd let the Galen across our borders and let them kill Demji in the first place. And he was the one hunting our kind down to use as weapons now. It was his fault she was dead. But we were still alive. Me, Emin, Delilah. And we weren't going to become another Noorsham. We were going to topple him before he could find another Demji. I'd make sure of that. I'm fine. Delilah squirmed as her brother checked her over for injury. Really, Ahmed, I'm fine. Shahzad gave me a significant look that she hid behind the guise of scratching her nose. After half a year, I could read Shahzad like an open book. This one meant we were about to be in trouble. So we hadn't exactly had permission to take Delilah with us, but we'd known we'd need help if we were going to get past Saramotai's impenetrable walls. We'd also known that if we asked Ahmed if we could take Delilah on a mission, he'd say no. So we just hadn't asked him. It wasn't technically disobedience if we'd never been forbidden from doing it. Even though we both knew that excuse would fly just about as well as either of us could. Personally, I'd been hoping Ahmed might not notice that Delilah was gone at all, He was busy running a whole rebellion, and we were gone only a handful of days. But then, unlike me, most people seemed to be able to keep track of their siblings.
She did good, Ahmed, I offered. A lot of folk would be dead if it weren't for her.
A lot more folk. But I didn't say that aloud. I knew Shahzad heard it in my silence all the same. Delilah just beamed at her feet as Ahmed finally tore his eyes off his sister to survey the state we were in and the rabble behind us. Some were riding, others were on foot if they were strong enough. Mahdi was among those who had declared he needed a horse after his ordeal. Emin had shifted to a girl's shape, riding double with Navid, whose arms were wrapped around her protectively.
I see you managed to bring back Emin and Mahdi, and then some.
There was a wry hint under his indulgent smile. Some of the ex-prisoners had stayed in Saramotai, but plenty of others had decided to leave with us. Women who had nothing to stay for, whose husbands and sons had been among the bodies hanging from the walls. The woman who'd called me Zahia was one of them. The Holy Father in Saramotai had seen to her as best he could, enough to tell me that she wouldn't die on the journey to camp. Mahdi argued about bringing her, but Shahzad didn't question me when I said it seemed wrong to leave her helpless in the city that had tried to kill her. I could tell Shahzad knew there was something I wasn't telling her. The woman had been weaving in and out of consciousness since we'd left the city, riding mostly tied with a Shima to another woman in front of her so she didn't slip off. It wasn't exactly uncommon for strays to come back from missions. I ought to know, half a year ago I was one. Jin had been meant to come back with news of the Sultan's so-called weapon. Instead, he came back with me. And in the 6 months that had passed since then, I'd long stopped being the rebel camp's newest arrival. We'd been joined by rebel sympathizers like Navid, ignited to action after the battle at Fahali. Orphans picked up in Malal, clinging to the hem of Jin's shirt the whole way back to camp. A defecting soldier who'd been guided our way by Shahzad's father, General Hamad. Sometimes Shahzad would slip and refer to them as troops. Ahmed called them refugees. After a few weeks, everyone was just a rebel.
We need to debrief.
The words came with a significant look directed specifically at me and Shahzad. Ahmed wasn't about to dig into us in front of everyone, but that didn't mean we were off the hook. Shahzad was already talking as we pushed through the gateway that led to camp, telling Ahmed what had happened in Saramotai. She danced around arranging to get me captured and skipped to how she and Delilah, invisible under Delilah's illusion, had slipped in behind me the moment I'd pretended to trip in the doorway, waiting for nightfall to let the others in behind us. The less she could remind Ahmed we'd put his sister in danger, the better. The way she told it, you'd barely know there'd been a fight. We'd left Samira in charge of the city, Shahzad told him.
We need to send her reinforcements, she said as we felt our way through the inside of the cliff towards camp.
We left everyone we could to help. Everyone we could meant the half a dozen other men who had come with us to Saramatai. Navid would have made 7 whole people, but he wouldn't be separated from Emin again. It wasn't exactly an army that could hold a stronghold, but it was what we had.
It's not enough to hold the peace. We should send 50 well-trained soldiers before somebody else develops any ambition and steps into Malik's shoes. And we need to reinforce the city against the Sultan.
Ahmed. Shahzad lowered her voice,
casting her eyes behind us to where the newly recruited rabble was feeling their way nervously through the dark tunnel.
Your father's troops were an hour half of the desert.
Ahmed didn't answer her right away, but as we neared the end of the tunnel, I could see he understood the significance even better than I did. A whole lot of the power we held relied on appearances. Truth be told, we wouldn't be able to match the Sultan's army on a battlefield if they tried to take the desert back from us by force. Keeping our half of the desert relied on the Sultan believing our numbers were greater than they were. And that deception relied on his men never straying into our half of the desert to find out the truth. As we stepped through the other side of the cliff face, I blinked against the sudden brightness. The summer light made the rebel camp look like one of Delilah's illusions, too beautiful and alive in this desert full of dust and death. A world apart. The camp was twice the size it had been when I'd first seen it. I couldn't keep myself from glancing over my shoulder at the women of Sara Motai following us. I'd gotten into the habit of watching the new refugees' faces when they first set eyes on the camp. I wasn't disappointed this time. One by one, they stepped out of the tunnel and got their first look at my home. For just a moment, grief and fear and exhaustion parted, giving way to wonder as they took in the oasis rolled out below them. Watching them, it felt for a second like I was seeing it with fresh eyes too. Except in the past 6 months, I'd gotten used to coming home. I knew everything about the camp. I knew the faces that waited here and the scars they wore. Both the ones that brought them to our war and the ones they'd gotten fighting for us. I knew which tents were slightly lopsided and what the birds sounded like in late afternoon from the bathing pools, and that the smell of fresh baked bread meant Lubna was on cooking duty for the day. I half expected to see Jin sauntering toward me, like he had the last time I'd gotten back from a mission I'd been sent on without him. A smile on his face, his collar loose so I could see the edge of his tattoo, sleeves rolled up to his elbows so when he pulled me to him, making my own shirt ride up, the bare cool skin of his arms pressed against the desert flushed heat of mine. But it looked like he still hadn't come home. Shahzad was arguing with Ahmed over the details of who to send to Sara Motai and how many, leaving me to take charge of our new refugees. I gave Emin and Navid instructions to get them settled. Take the sick and wounded to the Holy Father. Get everyone else working. Navid didn't need instruction. He'd been on the other side of it himself. But he still smiled genially as I gave it. When I was done, Emin started to help him guide the women to the other side of camp. I caught Ahmed's gaze over Shahzad's shoulder as she kept walking, with Mahdi interjecting every so often. Ahmed's eyes flicked pointedly to Delilah. I understood. He didn't want her any more involved than she already was in this. Delilah? I said, catching her attention. Would you go with Navid and Emin and make sure they can keep their hands off each other long enough to settle everyone? Delilah might be naive, but she wasn't stupid. She knew what I was doing. I thought she might make one last stab at standing up for me and Shahzad, but she ducked her head, pushing her purple hair behind her ears with false brightness before following Emin and Navid and their gaggle of women from Sara Motai. Ahmed waited until she was out of earshot before he started. What were you two thinking? He hadn't taken his eyes from his sister's back. Delilah's a child, and she is not trained to fight. Not to mention that your plan almost wound up getting you shot in the head, Mahdi butted in. Your total lack of a plan got you locked up in a jail cell, so I wouldn't point fingers if I were you.
You know what they say. Those who point fingers wind up with them broken so badly they point straight back at them.
Shahzad had even less patience for Mahdi than I did. She'd known him longer, from the days before the Sultim trials in Isman.
I'm pretty sure that's not a saying, I said.
You almost died, Mahdi said again, like we might be too stupid to understand.
You say that like it's the first time I've ever had a gun pointed at me, I retorted as Shahzad rolled her eyes. It's not even the first time this month.
My sister is not accustomed to near death as you two.
Ahmed started walking, an unspoken signal that we should fall into step.
We wouldn't have let anything happen to her, Ahmed, Shahzad said as she and I dropped into pace easily on either side of him, leaving Mahdi trying to elbow his way in.
Besides, Delilah's as demgy as I am.
We passed out of the glaring sun at the edge of camp and into the shade of the oasis trees. We were headed towards Ahmed's pavilion. I was trying to remember just when I'd gotten quite so comfortable talking back to royalty.
She wants to help, same as everyone else here.
That's not why you took her, though, is it?
Ahmed didn't look at me as we walked.
You took her to prove a point.
He was talking about Jin. It had been 2 months back that I'd gotten shot and nearly died while Jin and I were on a mission in Ilyaz. I'd been lucky to survive. When I woke up, back at camp, stitched and bandaged, Jin was gone. Ahmed had sent him to the border while I was unconscious to infiltrate the Sichian army, which had been gnawing at Miraji from the eastern border, trying to get a foothold in our desert ever since the Sultan's alliance with the Galen had shattered. I wasn't so petty as to drag his sister into danger just because he'd sent his brother into it when I might have been dying. But then, I wasn't sure I could say that out loud, either.
We can need her and prove a point at the same time.
Shahzad stepped in, taking the bullet for me. We'd nearly reached Ahmed's pavilion as he halted, turning to face us. I staggered to a stop, and for a moment, all I could see was the rebel prince facing me, outlined by the golden sun on his pavilion, standing half a pace above us, like he could bring justice down on our heads at any second, like he was our ruler instead of our friend. It was then that I noticed the entrance to the pavilion was closed. That was why I could see the sun stitched into the tent flaps, radiating from Ahmed like he was stepping straight out of the sun. I'd only ever seen those closed when Ahmed was holding a war council. Something was wrong. Shahzad realized it the same second I did.
Hala's back, Ahmed said.
Something had to be wrong to get him to drop the subject of his sister so quickly.
She got back from Isman just before you. Maz spied you on the horizon from the air, so we thought we'd wait to talk.
His eyes danced to Mahdi, and then away so quickly I wouldn't have noticed if I hadn't been watching him so closely.
What happened? Shahzad asked.
Why didn't you tell Emin that Hala was back? Emin and Hala were siblings. They shared a genie father. If Hala hadn't already been in Isman when Emin was captured, then there was no question we would have taken her instead of Delilah. She would have torn through the mind of every inhabitant of Saramotai to get Emin out.
Is Saida with her?
Mahdi butted in. Saida, the reason Hala had been sent to Isman in the first place. I'd never met Saida, but I'd heard plenty about her. She was the same age as me, She'd been married at 15 to one of Shahzad's father's soldiers. Shahzad was the one who'd noticed she had more broken bones than her soldier husband. She was the one who had contrived to move Saida out of her husband's home to the hidden house, a rebellion safe house in Isman. From there, she had gotten tangled up with the rebellion, and with Mahdi, from the sound of things. In the early days, right after the Sultim trials, Saida had managed to maneuver herself into a position in the Sultan's palace as a spy for the rebellion. A month back, she'd missed sending her regular report. Ahmed waited a week. It was possible something else had gone wrong. And the last thing anyone wanted was to blow her cover if it was just a delay. A week of Mahdi nagging Ahmed every day to send someone for her before Hala finally went to find out what was happening. "Is Saida all right?" Mahdi pressed. He sounded hopeful, though I could see the apprehension in his eyes as he looked over his prince's shoulder at the shut pavilion. Ahmed's silence was answer enough. Inside the pavilion, Hala was kneeling on the ground, slumped over a pretty Mirajin girl, her golden hands resting on the girl's head. Hala didn't look up as we came in, and her eyes stayed screwed shut. She looked tired. Tired enough that she wasn't using an illusion to hide her missing fingers like she usually did. Her Demji skin moved like molten gold as every shuddering breath she took shifted the lamplight across it. A thin sheen of sweat clung to her. Not from heat, I realized, but from effort. She was using her Demji powers, just not on her own vanity. She was using them on the girl on the ground. Saida, I guessed. Saida's eyes were wide and unseeing, fixed on something far away that none of the rest of us could make out. Hala was inside her mind. Mahdi dropped to his knees on her other side, across from Hala. "Saida!" He gathered her up in his arms. "Saida, can you hear me?" "I'd appreciate it if you didn't do that." Hala's familiar, clipped voice sounded strained. She still didn't open her eyes. "It's a little insulting to try to shake me out of her head like I'm a bad dream, seeing as I've been holding an illusion for the better part of a week to try to help." A week? That would explain why Hala looked like she was cracking. It was hard for any of us but the shapeshifters to use our powers for more than a few hours at a time, let alone a week. "She was easy enough to find, waiting for me in a cell." Hala slumped on the ground. She was shaking visibly, barely hanging on. "Getting in her head was the only way I could carry her all the way here quietly." She looked desperately at Ahmed. "Did you bring something to knock her out?" Ahmed nodded, pulling a small bottle of something clear from his pocket. "What happened to her?" Mahdi shifted so he was cradling Saida. I'd always figured Mahdi for a coward, but I realized now I'd never actually seen him look scared before. Not even on the wrong side of a prison door. And this fear wasn't for himself. It was possible he did belong in this rebellion after all. Hala glanced to Ahmed for permission. He hesitated for a second before nodding. The only sign Hala gave that she was letting go of her power was the small sigh that slid out between her lips before she sat back on her heels. But the change in Saida was like watching nightfall at high noon. Her blank peace turned to screaming, her head arching back as she writhed out of Mahdi's grip. She was thrashing blindly like a trapped animal, clawing at Mahdi's clothes, at the ground, at anything.
Shahzad took the bottle from Ahmed's hand and the shima from her neck and poured the contents of the bottle into the cloth. Just the smell of it made my head spin a little. She latched one arm around Saida's body, trapping the screaming girl's arms against her sides, and pressed the soaked cloth against Saida's nose and mouth. Shahzad pushed slightly on the girl's middle, forcing her to take a gasping, panicked breath, inhaling the full force of the fumes. Mahdi hadn't moved. He just stared with hollow eyes as Saida's struggling got weaker until unconsciousness claimed her, making her go limp in Shahzad's grip. Mahdi. Ahmed broke the silence finally. Take Saida to the Holy Father's tent. She can rest there. Mahdi nodded, grateful for the escape. He wasn't a strong man. A scholar, not a fighter. His arms shook with the effort as he gathered her up, but none of us was about to insult him by offering him help. Rest isn't going to help her, I said as the tent flap closed behind him. She's dying. The truth came easily. Us Demji couldn't tell a lie. Whatever they had done to her, it was killing her. I know, Ahmed said. But trust me, it does very little good to tell someone that the one they love is dying. He looked straight at me when he said that. I wondered what had passed between him and Jin when I was at death's door. What did they do to her? Shahzad's voice was tight. Did she tell them anything about us? Of everyone in this camp, Shahzad had more at stake than any of us. She belonged to a family at the heart of Isman, and if it ever got out that Shahzad was on the rebel prince's side, there were a lot of people close to her the Sultan could easily reach for. Oh, forgive me. I didn't ask after the particulars of her torture while I was rescuing her all by myself, while also trying not to hand my Demji self straight over to the Sultan. Hala sniped. Maybe you'd like me to go back and trade myself in for some useless information? Hala was normally short-tempered, just not with Shahzad. Folk didn't exactly do well when they got smart with Shahzad. Hala must be worse off than I'd realized. If the Sultan knew about you, we'd already have heard, Ahmed said. We need a new spy in the palace. Shahzad drummed her fingers across the hilt of the sword at her side. Maybe it's time for me to return from my holy pilgrimage. As far as anyone in Isman knew, Shahzad al-Hamad, General Hamad's devastatingly beautiful daughter, had come down with a bad bout of holiness. She'd retreated to the sacred site of Azar, where the first mortal was said to have been made, to pray in silence and meditation. It's nearly Aurangzeb. It would be a good reason to go back. You get invited to Aurangzeb? My ears perked up. Aurangzeb was held every year on the anniversary of the Sultan's coup for the Mirajin throne. A commemoration of the bloody night when he struck a bargain with the Galan army and slaughtered his own father and half his brothers. Even down in Dustwalk, we'd heard stories about the celebrations, of fountains full of water flecked with gold, dancers who leapt through fire as entertainment, and food made of sugar that was sculpted so fine the folk who made it went blind. General's daughter privileges. Shahzad sounded bored already. No, Ahmed cut across us quickly. I can't spare you. I might not be as good a strategist as you, but even I know you don't send your best general into the fray as a spy if you can help it. And am I so very dispensable? Hala asked from where she was still slumped on the ground, a tinge of sarcasm in her voice. Ahmed ignored her. It was impossible to respond to every sarcastic thing Hala said and still have time to do anything else.